Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's daily political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm today joined by Fraser Nelson and Katie Balls. So Katie, Theresa May was on BBC Five Live earlier for a phone-in with Emma Barnett, taking questions from the public. How did it go?
Well, this is her second phone-in in less than a week, and it's interesting because Theresa May normally avoids doing too much media. She doesn't look particularly comfortable doing it, but I think there is a realisation in Number 10 that if she is to have any chance, and it still looks unlikely, of passing her deal, she has to try and get the public at least on side. That could change some MPs' mind. It's at least how the thinking goes. So it didn't seem like her natural habitat, but she seemed fairly confident as she faced some questions. I think most of the questions were a little bit hostile. There was one question in particular where a caller asked her if she could just guarantee now that she believed her deal was better than EU membership. And what they got was a series of waffle. And eventually Emma Barnett, who was presenting it, went to the caller and said, "Do you think you got an answer to your question?" And the caller did not think they had. And I think slightly awkward for Theresa May, this morning before this interview, we had Dominic Raab on Radio 4. And he said, you know, ardent Brexiteer, that he, if he was going to be completely frank, what's currently on offer is worse than EU membership.
I think this is very damaging, actually, for Theresa May right now, because I know a lot of senior Brexiteers who also will tell you in private that they do think Theresa May's deal is worse than EU membership. And when I say in private, this is the off-the-record conversations that journalists like me have with politicians the whole time. I get the impression, talking to them, like if asked, they would say, as Dominic Raab did this morning, "Yes, I do think it's better to stay in than to go with her deal." And sooner or later, if you ask other people, I've got no idea, for example, what Boris Johnson or Enoch and Smith think of this, but it wouldn't surprise me if either of them would say that they think that staying in would be preferable to her deal. Then you're going to get a critical mass of people, and the Remainers can see almost a coalition, really, between them and the Brexiteers who think, well, let's just go back to the EU because at least we might be able to get out of it one day, whereas with Theresa May's deal, you're stuck for a long time. So it's funny that she, even the Prime Minister, had to waffle on whether she thought her deal was better than EU membership, because a lot of her cabinet cannot say that it is. In fact, I've only spoken to one frontbencher who genuinely thinks it's an improvement.
Well, Fraser, what about no deal? I mean, are there people who also think that no deal might be better than Remain?
Oh, yeah. Right now, I don't know a single Brexiteer who, or the ones that I speak to, and I speak to more than is good for my health, who is not thinking that a negotiated no deal is the way to go. I mean, they vary over the time frame, and Andrea Leadsom talks about having a year implementation period before moving on to no deal. But you're not finding many Tories now who think, well, let's go back to the EU and negotiate a better deal. There was a while when Dominic Raab thought you'd be able to do that. But you're seeing them drop away. And as the renegotiate lobby drops away, you're getting an increase of people who are saying EU membership is better, or we have got now no option than to pursue no deal when, and we think it will be when, she loses that vote in the House of Commons.
And I think the EU think this is a done deal. They are not willing to open this up, go back into the withdrawal agreement, partly because if they do that, there are several EU member states who have changes they also want to make. So it'd be opening a whole can of worms. So I think it's interesting that Brexiters are now moving away from, you know, kind of giving up the idea that was mooted a week or so ago about making small changes. They realise that's not really going to happen. So that means, do you like this deal, or do you think you can start moving towards a no deal or a mitigated no deal? I think Theresa May, avoiding the question of whether her deal was better than, you know, staying in the EU, it is a bit damaging, but given that she voted Remain, she's always been a little bit vague when it comes to whether or not she thinks Brexit is a great decision for the country. That vagueness has been slightly damaging, given the one she's leading it, and you would hope that she saw kind of the happy future.
Fraser, in your Telegraph column today, you talk about the need for a plan B. I mean, what sort of thing would you like Theresa May to be saying at this point?
Personally, I think the game is up with Theresa May. I think she's got her deal, and if that fails, I can't see her changing her plan. I would quite like her to, but I don't think she will. But the other deal to be done then, I think the only viable alternative the way you can do Brexit is saying to the EU, look, we've spent all this time negotiating. Unfortunately, Parliament isn't going to approve your Brexit deal. So let's just move to world trade terms. And you could see this is effectively what she was discussing at Lancaster House. No customs union, no single market. We're going to have the same relationship with the EU as Canada has. It's pretty familiar. Sure, we need to make arrangements in the borders, but we would pay the EU, say, £10 million or something, is what we're paying membership right now, to buy ourselves a year to make all the preparations. So that means beefing up the border security, coming up with all kinds of arrangements for aviation, for quarantine, for tariff scheduling. It is doable, and I think it would be way preferable to what I see as a trap that would keep the Tory party in the country banging on about Brexit for years to come. I mean, apart from anything else, I mean, I was a reluctant Brexiteer. I'm quite a soppy Europhile by instinct, and I still would describe myself very much as a pro-European. So it's not as if I've always been mad crazy for Brexit, but I'm of the opinion that if we are going to leave the EU, we ought to leave the EU. And to come up with her vision, which is to basically stay 80% in, but in a way which is bound to keep this open wound seeping for years to come, cannot be any kind of solution to this question.
Katie, we've also got the EU Council meeting this weekend. What sort of thing are we expecting to see discussed there?
Well, we're expecting lots of photo ops of a beaming Theresa May with various Brussels figures. And this is because this is the point where they're supposed to be signing off on things. And then we'll come back to the Commons and Theresa May starts to work out how she can maybe, it's quite difficult to see, but how she can somehow get this deal through Parliament. So I think this weekend, what Number 10 are going to try and do is basically make this into a positive PR exercise where possible for the Prime Minister. That doesn't mean it's not without its own hurdles. We've already heard from the Spanish side that they are not happy about Gibraltar.
Yeah, so unhappy. They say that, I couldn't believe it. The Spanish Prime Minister says he's going to veto Brexit, right?
What in particular is it that they don't like about the Brexit deal in relation to Gibraltar?
Oh, they basically think that Britain should be dealing directly with them for permission about Gibraltar. I think they're just kicking off in the way that, you know, any negotiation involving all these countries is going to have somebody sounding off about something or another. But here, you don't need unanimity. If you need unanimity for a trade deal, if Theresa May were to ever negotiate one 2 years down the line, you would need everybody to approve that. But for Brexit, you need consensus. So you can have consensus with Spain moaning on about Gibraltar, which it does.
And just on Gibraltar, I mean, in this tweet, as Fraser just mentioned, you had the suggestion that they were going to stop Brexit over. I mean, if they're going to stop Brexit, they're probably going to have to consult with the British public who voted to stop Brexit. But it does, I mean, I don't think actually this is really going to have that much weight, because you have the Germans actually pressing this idea that people need to put their quibbles aside, nothing's being changed. If you open up this agreement and make small changes, everyone's going to want to change. But it does add to this idea, which there are some people in the Brexiteer camps who would actually quite like it if a member state vetoed this deal, because it would mean it wasn't on the UK side, and it might mean that the EU had a little bit more incentive to do this mitigated no deal, so to do mini agreements. Because the big worry about no deal is that if it is blamed on the Brits, if it is, you know, acrimonious, you won't have any goodwill. In fact, you'll have the opposite on the EU side, which would make no deal a lot harder to organise. If you could blame a member state, easier.
Okay, just talking about PR, what do you make of this Brexit mini-mart that's been set up in Peckham by the People's Vote, selling things like chlorinated chicken and con man's mustard?
Yeah, so, I mean, the People's Vote have had many PR attempts recently. I think this one, you know, it's fairly fun. It's obviously on social media taken off quite quickly because they have, you know, just packaged chicken which has chlorinated on. I mean, the problem is Theresa May's deal wouldn't actually really allow for chlorinated chicken, because the whole thing about Theresa May's deal is you can't really do free trade or deals with third countries because you'd be bound to EU regulations indefinitely. So I don't know quite what they're opposing of it. If they're opposing the idea of a no-deal Brexit, sure. But what the People's Vote campaign is trying to do is oppose the Prime Minister's deal first and then whatever else follows. So I think it is, given that actually, perhaps you could say it was an argument in favour of the deal for the People's Vote, the fact that Theresa May's deal is quite protectionist, so you're not going to get your chlorinated chicken right now.
If it was going to be a real Brexit supermarket, everything would be about 10% cheaper, which is what we get in world trade without having to pay this EU protectionist tariff.
They must disagree because their shop is called Cost Upper, so they Cost must Upper. They must
well,
disagree
I think
with
they'll
that.
Find is,
And just finally, Fraser, have you seen Caroline Noakes has said that no one should be paid over 1 million? She's obviously a Tory MP. Do you think that's quite a strange thing to be hearing from a Tory MP?
I think this shows what progress Jeremy Corbyn is making influencing British public debate. I mean, you're quite right. A few years ago, we would not really have had Tories stand up in the House of Commons and say, isn't it outrageous that anybody earns more than £1 million? And of course, nobody likes to think of anybody earning like a seven-figure sum. But it happens, and the answer to why it's justifiable is that this is what free countries do. This is what they look like. There is not a free country in the world where people are not earning staggering amounts of money, usually because they have been quite successful. And J.K. Rowling will sell a lot of books and will make a lot of money as a result of that. She brings happiness and satisfaction to millions of people around the world. And so the kind of globalization of success really magnifies the rewards. Now, if you're uncomfortable with somebody earning £1 million, then bear this in mind. But this will be split under our system almost 50-50 with the taxpayer. Almost £500,000 will be of that £1 million salary will be coming to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and that's £500,000 which your ordinary taxpayer will not be asked to fund. And I'll give you a figure that ought to warm the heart of the most ardent Corbynista redistributionist, that in Britain, the best paid 1% are paying 28% of all income tax collected. Never has that proportion been higher. Never has so much been taken from so few. And there's a flip side to that as well, that the bottom 50%, the lower paid half of workers in Britain, together are asked for less than 10% of total income tax. Never has that share required from them been so low. Now that's why in Britain we do have huge salaries, but we also have income inequality at pretty much the lowest it's been for 30 years. So yes, there is inequality in income, there's always going to be this, but a progressive taxation system which we've got will make sure that the more they get paid in a salary, the more they pay in tax, and the less everybody else has to pay.
Thank you, Fraser, and thank you, Katie. And just while we've got everyone's attention, Fraser, could you just tell us a bit about this Brexit event that's happening?
Yes, we're having an event called Brexit the Final Deal. Dominic Raab, James Forsyth and others will be there to discuss how the land lies. It's Wednesday the 5th of December, likely to be just a few days before Theresa May's crunch vote. So if any subscribers are there, or even non-subscribers, you're very welcome to join us. Just look for Brexit the Final Deal on our website, and hopefully we'll see you there. It's in central London, 7 o'clock, Wednesday the 5th.
Thanks for listening, and do join us again back on Monday. I'm